What's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The U.S. calls on Iraq to provide more recruits in the fight against the Islamic State group. U.S. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter Wednesday told U.S. lawmakers Iraq must make a greater commitment to fight Islamic State militants, saying Baghdad has failed to produce enough ground troops.
Our training efforts in Iraq have thus far been slowed by a lack of trainees. We simply haven't received enough recruits. Of the 24,000 Iraqi security forces we had originally envisioned training at our four sites by this fall, we've only received enough recruits to be able to train about 7,000, in addition to 2,000 counterterrorism service personnel.
He said the U.S.-led air campaign against IS positions in Iraq requires capable, motivated, legitimate local ground troops to seize, clear, and hold land. Also testifying, General Martin Dempsey, chairman of the Joint Chiefs, says introducing U.S. troops is not an option.
I would not recommend that we put U.S. forces in harm's way simply to stiffen the spine of local forces. If their spine is not stiffened by the threat of ISIL on their way of life, nothing we do is going to stiffen their spine.
President Obama last week agreed to send another 450 U.S. troops to Iraq to advise ground forces in Anbar. Islamic State is claiming responsibility for four separate car bombings in the Yemeni capital Sana'a that killed at least 31 and wounded nearly 20 on Wednesday. They say it was in retaliation for Iranian-backed Shia Houthi rebels overrunning the capital. At least 13 killed, dozens wounded when an explosive device detonated outside the town of Monguno in Nigeria's northeast Borno State. The devices found on the side of the road were being transported to a military base to be defused when they went off near a marketplace. This is VOA News. European Union governments have reached preliminary agreement to extend sanctions against Russia for 6 months for its role in the Ukraine conflict. The decision reached Wednesday in Brussels is expected to be formally adopted at a meeting of the bloc's 28 foreign ministers next week. The Kremlin says it will respond to the EU decision. The Greek central bank has warned that failure to reach a bailout deal with its international creditors will result in recession, decline in income levels, and possibly a withdrawal from the eurozone. The bank issued its statement Wednesday, a day before Eurozone finance ministers meet, to discuss how to get more emergency funds to Greece by June 30th, when Athens is obligated to pay back nearly $2 billion in loans to the International Monetary Fund. Hundreds of Syrian and African migrants in the Italian city Ventimiglia near the French border have been waiting for nearly a week to cross over. Lacking proper travel documents, many are living at the central train station. Ibrahim, who says he came from Sudan, remains hopeful their cases will be resolved.
We have a hope that the solution it will come because we are very suffering here. And the situation unbelievable for human being to sit here. For that reason, I'm surely some countries, they are trying to give us a chance. So I'm surely we will get a chance.
Saddam Ahmed, who says he's from Darfur, is less hopeful.
I have one question. Why they save us from the Mediterranean? I think it's the same situation here or on the sea. We will die anymore. So we'll stay and wait. European Union solve this problem or send back to Africa to live as we was living.
France, Italy, and Germany have agreed to identify migrants arriving by sea and swiftly relocate them across the European Union or send them back to their countries if their claims for asylum are rejected. A Mauritanian court convicted three men of belonging to the Islamic State militant group, sentencing them to between 5 and 10 years in prison. They were convicted on charges of terrorism, terrorist activities, and possessing terrorist propaganda. The death toll from the South Korean MERS outbreak has risen to 23. The health ministry says they've confirmed three more cases of Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, bringing the total number of infections to 165. The World Health Organization says South Korean officials failed to implement sufficient measures to prevent the spread of the illness. The journal Nature says scientists have discovered new anti-malarial drug that could treat patients with a single dose costing about a dollar. Although years from the marketplace, results from tests conducted on human blood and in living mice suggest it's highly potent. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, June 18th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. The United Nations expresses concern about South Sudan government's actions.
If you look at the fact that yesterday it was announced that from now on, UN personnel who are taking pictures will be considered as spies, well, I think this raises a number of concerns.
Hervé Lassus is the United Nations peacekeeping chief. Meanwhile, South Sudan accuses Khartoum of carrying out deadly bombing raids on its Upper Nile state. There are tensions in Burundi's countryside ahead of a controversial election, and Uganda's Electoral Commission warns political parties not to violate election laws before it's time to campaign.
That time for nomination for campaigning has not yet reached, and therefore whoever is posing as a candidate is out of order because we don't have any candidate as it speaks now.
Jotam Taramua is the spokesman for Uganda's Electoral Commission. A longtime friend will challenge Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni in the 2016 presidential election and questions around Nigeria's clean cooking stove program. Those stories, plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The United Nations peacekeeping chief on Wednesday expressed his frustration with South Sudan leaders, saying President Salva Kiir and his government have denied repeated requests for the UN mission in South Sudan to use equipment needed to protect civilians. VOA's Margaret Bashir reports from the United Nations.
Hervé Ledsous laid out to the UN Security Council the problems that his 12,000 troops, police, and civilian personnel in South Sudan have been experiencing because of the government's ongoing lack of cooperation.
I see a country, and I can be very candid, that country is South Sudan, a country where we felt that we needed to do a better job to protect civilians. We needed attack helicopters. Request denied. We needed UAVs. Request denied by the president to me personally three times last year.
Ledsous said the mission's movements have also been restricted. Also troubling, the South Sudan government is finding new ways to harass and intimidate mission personnel.
Juba did declare some of our senior personnel non grata. If you look at the fact that yesterday it was announced that from now on, UN personnel who are taking pictures will be considered as spies. Well, I think this raises a number of concerns.
Among the senior staff in South Sudan who were recently told they were no longer welcome was Toby Lanzer, the deputy head of mission and the UN's humanitarian coordinator. The government accused him of being outspoken about the economic and humanitarian situation in the country, where 4.6 million people face severe food insecurity and more than 2 million have been displaced from their homes and villages. For over a year, the UN has been sheltering more than 100,000 civilians who have sought protection at hastily set up camps inside UN bases in some of the worst affected areas. The civilians are fleeing fighting that ignited after a political rivalry between President Salva Kiir and his former vice president Riek Machar escalated into open conflict in December 2013. Tens of thousands have died since, and the two men have not heeded international warnings to adhere to a ceasefire deal made in January 2014 and start working towards a transitional government. The UN Secretary General held a special high-level meeting on the crisis on the sidelines of the annual UN meetings in New York last September. President Kiir, who was in town, snubbed the gathering by not showing up. The UN Security Council has repeatedly threatened the spoilers with sanctions and dangled the possibility of an arms embargo, but has so far only set up the legal mechanism for imposing sanctions. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
South Sudan officials are accusing Khartoum's armed forces of carrying out deadly bombing raids on South Sudan's Upper Nile state. A South Sudan military spokesman said at least five people, most of them children, were killed in the air raids. Mugumi Davis Wakaringi of VOA South Sudan in Focus program reports from Juba.
SPLA spokesman Colonel Philip Aguer says several people were killed and scores wounded when Russian-built Antonovs entered South Sudan airspace on Sunday night and began bombing parts of Upper Nile State.
That happened at areas of northeast of Ren County, where the bomb SPLA positioned in a place called Babani. and another place called Atam in Ren County, and Sheta in Maban County.
Aguer called the attacks a barbaric aggression and a violation of international law. He says most of the victims of the attacks were children.
All these three unprovoked aggression by the Sudan Armed Forces resulted into killing of innocent civilians. Four children were killed in Sheta and one SPLA soldier, in addition to nine soldiers wounded and the destruction of the SPLA base in Barbani.
Aguer says South Sudan will go through diplomatic channels to try to get the bottom of the air raids. But he says the SPLA stands ready to defend South Sudan against any attack.
We as an army, our channel is to maintain protection of the territories and integrity of South Sudan. We will do accordingly.
A spokesman for the South Sudan Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Mawen Makol Arik, says the government today summoned the chargé d'affaires of Sudan Embassy and handed him a protest letter. McCall says the attacks could jeopardize relations between the two countries.
South Sudan is a sovereign state, cannot allow itself to be bombed even now and then. If required to be, we can defend ourselves with this, and this is also going to be nowhere. So it is better that we build a good relationship rather than trying to oppress ourselves.
Several attempts to contact the Sudan chargé d'affaires in Juba for comment were unsuccessful. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
Uganda's Electoral Commission is warning all political parties and civil society groups that they will be violating the country's electoral laws if they engage in early political campaigning before an official declaration. Electoral Commission spokesman Jolton Taramua's comments came after former Prime Minister Patrick Amama Mbabazi wrote a letter to President Yoweri Museveni, officially declaring his intention to challenge Mr. Museveni for the presidential nomination of the ruling National Resistance Movement, the NRM. Taremua tells reporter Peter Clotty the commission wants all rules governing electoral activities to be observed in the run-up to the elections.
We released the roadmap 3 years ahead of the elections, and we indicated activities and their time frame. So that time for nomination for campaign has not yet reached. And therefore, whoever is posing as a candidate is out of order, because we don't have any candidate as I speak to you now. And we don't want the public to be stampeded on by people who want to stand but are already confirming that they are candidates. Because in order to be a candidate, you must be duly nominated by Electoral Commission. And it is not a matter of presenting yourself to Electoral Commission for nomination. You must fulfill certain requirements. Suppose you present yourself as a candidate now, at the time of nomination, you are lacking one or two of the requirements. You are not nominated.
Jotham, so why the need for the Electoral Commission to come out at this specific time? Why?
It is not late, but I mean, that is when we are getting this information that people are busy printing posters and T-shirts and distributing them. And that's why we have come out. The issue of lateness does not arise. We respond as and when the situation demands us to respond.
Some opposition political parties are calling for widespread electoral reforms, including reconstituting the Electoral Commission, among other issues, because they said the Electoral Commission has always not been fair to opposition politicians and political parties. What is your response to such demands?
I have never seen any opposition leader that appreciates the work of the Electoral Commission. I have had the opportunity to interact with election managers from different parts of the world, but when you get to interact and listen to one another, opposition parties in every country castigate electoral commissions in their country. So it is not a new allegation. I don't know what those reforms are intended to cure. They were talking of the Versailles of Voters Register, which has been compiled using biometric data, so that one collapses.
What do you say to your critics who say that the Electoral Commission seemed to be singling out the former Prime Minister because he declared that he will be challenging the President, and because they said the Electoral Commission is doing the bidding of the ruling party, and for that matter, President Museveni, that is why?
True. The message goes out, whoever is intending to stand as a presidential candidate, as a parliamentary candidate, as the chairman of the district, as the LOC 3 candidate, including the LOC 1 chairperson or councillors, it is not targeting the former Prime Minister. No.
Jotam Taramua is the spokesman for Uganda's Electoral Commission. He was speaking with reporter Peter Clotte from the capital, Kampala. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, June 18th. Daybreak Africa time is 15 and a half minutes past the hour. A longtime friend and short-time rival of Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni has announced his bid for president. Amama Mbabazi says democracy and faith must be restored to the country. As Elizabeth Pollard reports from Kampala, President Museveni is hitting back.
After years of speculation, Ugandans awoke Monday to news that former Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi would be running for president in 2016. Mr. Mbabazi made his declaration on YouTube, saying the current system of government must be reinvigorated. It is seen as a sharp blow to President Yoweri Museveni, who was a close ally to Mr. Mbabazi for nearly 30 years. Both worked together to establish the nation's ruling political party, the National Resistance Movement, as well as the current government. But about 2 years ago, a rift began to form between them. Many speculated it was because Mr. Mbabazi had overstepped politically, trying to seize more power. On Tuesday, President Museveni responded to Mr. Mbabazi's declaration with his own video, accusing the former prime minister of wasting everyone's time with such a premature announcement. He also asked how somebody who had been a key player in government for so long could demonize the current shape of the nation. While some have criticized the video, saying it makes Mr. Museveni appear scared and defensive, political blogger Michael Freeman Ojula thinks it was the right move.
The posting of that video, Museveni video online, that is the kind of president Ugandans want to see. They want to see that kind of president who just doesn't keep in hiding when something wrong is happening. They want a reactive president. It is shown that he has given even Mbabazi a freedom to say what he feels like saying. So it has actually played him a very good PR.
Mr. Mbabazi says he intends to run within the NRM party, a party he was secretary general of until late last year when Mr. Museveni, the NRM chairman, removed him. To run under the NRM, Mr. Mbabazi will have to be approved within the party ranks as a candidate. Although difficult, some observers are saying it's not impossible. Political analyst Owen Arima explains why the former prime minister has to be careful with his strategy.
I think he should come out and take responsibility first for the failures in the system, because he has been part of the system. He should apologize for the failures that the government did, which he was part of. And then he should maybe go ahead and tell the people, this is the new beginning for us. But if Mbabazi plays victim, which I suspect he will, I don't think very many Ugandans are going to like him. And the fact that Ugandans will not forget the things he did. You know why? Because NRM will constantly remind them.
The Electoral Commission has chastised Mr. Mbabazi for his announcement, which it says is ahead of the campaign program. Government spokesman Afuanua Pondo also came out against Mr. Mbabazi on social media, saying that he started a war that he will not win. On the other side, Mr. Mbabazi's supporters accused the government of tearing down campaign posters and arresting supporters. But many see his declaration as a game changer, which has sparked lively debate across Kampala, leaving many to wonder what Mr. Mbabazi's next move will bring for the future of government, the NRM, and Uganda. Elizabeth Pola for VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
As protests and clashes continue in Burundi's capital city, Bujumbura, against President Pierre Nkurunziza's decision to run for a third term, rural parts of the country do not appear to be experiencing the same turmoil. Deep in the hills in Nkurunziza's hometown, the president has some support from the population, but local political opponents claim that is only because it's difficult to speak out against the ruling party in the face of active intimidation. Emily Yap reports from the town of Ngozi.
Far from Bujumbura, the Burundian countryside seems little affected by the month of political protest and unrest in the capital city.
It's quiet here. These troubles happen far away. We only heard about them on the radio. We are scared that it could spread here, that it turns into a war throughout the country.
In this hill surrounding Pierre Nkurunziza's home region, the president and his ruling party, the CNDD-FDD, still have significant support.
He's done a lot of good things during the 10 years he's been in power. He built schools, implemented free health care for children under five, and our houses have been improved.
But critics say it isn't easy to speak out against the ruling party. This opposition supporter says he was threatened for showing others how to vote for the candidates.
They were in Bonerakure, the youth wing of the ruling party. They told me I didn't have the right to show people how to cast votes, since the ruling party had already explained the process. They arrested me and demanded I meet conditions in order to be released.
Opposition parties say they face intimidation and are harassed by the youth of the ruling party and the authorities, preventing them from campaigning.
We didn't campaign because of the insecurity in the country. We couldn't do it. There have been abductions in broad daylight in various towns, and some of our members have been arrested.
Officials in the ruling party deny harassment allegations. They say that there might be small groups of violent people on both sides, but that they have nothing to do with the official line of the party. 80% of Burundians live in the countryside, and their votes are expected to determine the outcome of the upcoming elections. Emily Ab for VOA News in Ngozi.
Nigeria's government announced last year it will start giving out clean cooking stoves to women in rural communities to cut down on the use of harmful wood stoves. But months later, a watchdog group is calling the program untransparent. Chris Stein reports.
Last November, Nigeria's government announced it would spend about $46 million to get 750,000 clean cook stoves and 18,000 insulated cook bags called Wonder Bags into the hands of rural women. Diseases associated with inhaling smoke disproportionately affect women who spend time cooking over wood fires. About 100,000 people die yearly from inhaling wood smoke, Nigeria's third biggest killer after malaria and AIDS. Now, anti-corruption group Follow the Money says the Ministry of Environment is not answering basic questions about how it is using money allocated for the program, nor has the program delivered on its promise to give women cook stoves. The ministry is threatening to cancel the contract, which would raise new questions about money already spent on the program. Hamzat Lawal is the co-founder of Follow the Money.
We want to see a transparent and accountable process whereby this would now engage different stakeholders and build public confidence around this.
Allegations of public corruption and misplaced money are common in Nigeria. New President Muhammadu Buhari successfully built an image of being tough on corruption to triumph in the March election. Lawal says there is no evidence of money being stolen, but he questions why the Ministry of Environment refuses to make public the contract with the cook stove supplier, or how it chose the supplier.
How did this contractor emerge to manage this huge process in purchasing 750,000 clean cook stoves on the back?
Cook stove supplier Renewable Energy Services Limited did not respond to inquiries, and a spokesman for the Ministry of Environment declined to be interviewed. But in a public address, the ministry permanent secretary said the supplier was chosen for its relationship with a German stove manufacturer, and the ministry might revoke the contract since it had not received all the promised stoves. If the contract is canceled, Lawal says money already spent and funds allocated to the ministry from a government account need to be accounted for.
If you're going to go ahead to cancel, what happens to the $1.3 billion that you have paid the contractor? What also happens to the $3.7 billion in your account, and also the $4.2 billion in the account of the Ecological Fund?
Answers to those questions could be expected to come from whoever becomes the new Minister of Environment. President Buhari has yet to announce his cabinet nominees. Chris Stein for VOA News, Dakar.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa. Supposedly, here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with volleyball. Algeria dismissed Senegal in straight sets of 25-14, 25-17 and 25-22 in the semifinals at the Africa Women's Nations Volleyball Championships in Nairobi, Kenya on Wednesday. In a similar fashion, Kenya beat Cameroon in straight sets in the other semifinal. In classification matches, Morocco beat Botswana 3-0 and Tunisia dismissed Mauritius 3-0. Today, Thursday, Botswana faced Mauritius in the 7th place playoff as Morocco engaged Tunisia in the 5th place playoff. Turning to football, Africa's hopes of a place in the final at the men's FIFA Under-20 World Cup in New Zealand failed to materialize after Serbia edged Mali 2-1 in extra time in their semi-final in Auckland on Wednesday. Earlier on, Brazil outclassed tournament debutants Senegal 5-0 in the semi-final in Christchurch. In athletics, Galeta Burka won the women's race at Ethiopia's World Athletics Championship 10,000-meter trial in Hengelo, Netherlands, on Wednesday night. Competing in only her second 10,000 meters of her career, Burka improved her lifetime best to 30 minutes and 49.68 seconds, the world's quickest time at the distance this year. Until this trial, Burka held the world's leading time of 31 minutes and 8.16 seconds, run in Palo Alto in California State in the United States of America in April. In Hengelo, Alemito Heroye was second ahead of world 10,000-meter bronze medalist Belianesh Olgira. In the men's contest, Mukhtar Edris prevailed in a lifetime best of 27 minutes and 17.18 seconds. Former world cross-country champion Iman Murga followed, while Mosinet Geremeo was third. Finally, in Kenya, Willie Tarbei pipped Kipyego Bet in a thrilling 800-meter final that stole the limelight at the Kenya trial for the World Youth Championships in Nairobi on Wednesday. Tarbei clocked 1 minute and 44.51 seconds to Bet's 1 minute and 44.55 seconds. African youth record holder Vincent Kipyego Ruto and Africa champion Sandra Felix Chebet won the boys and girls 2,000 meters steeplechase respectively, while Kumara Taki won the boys 1,500 meters in 3 minutes and 37.54 seconds. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Thursday morning, June 18th.
Good morning, Daybreak Africa. The order by International Criminal Court for the arrest of Al-Bashir, the Sudanese dictator, is a welcome idea because it will help to sanitize and wipe away bad leadership and wickedness among African leaders. Albert Alago, Buduka Toran, Betchebe Ward, in Obaniko local government area of Cross River State, Nigeria. Thank you.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us in the United States at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Muslims worldwide prepared for the start of Ramadan, a month of intense prayer and fasting. U.S. President Barack Obama on Wednesday extended warmest greetings to all those observing the month of fasting in the United States and around the world. After citing the new crescent moon, religious authorities in Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Iran, Indonesia, and most other parts of the world announced the holy month would begin today, Thursday. Officials in Pakistan ordered the fasting to begin Friday. During Ramadan, observant Muslims abstain from eating and drinking from sunrise to sunset for the entire month. A single sip of water or a puff of a cigarette is considered enough to invalidate the fast. That's it for this Thursday, June 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckfro, reporters Peter Clarty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post editor Marco Oman, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good Thursday.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on the Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time,
with David Bandy.
Everyone is looking for something special when maybe they should just listen instead. The VOA's African Music Mix will soothe your nerves and calm your head. Tune in from 0 to 300 UTC and 1100 to 1300 hours UTC to make you feel good. So treat yourself to that something special.